morning, and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. I'm a reporter for KUNM's Public Health New Mexico Project, which focuses on in-depth investigative coverage of public health issues and poverty. Today, we're talking about sexual assault on college campuses. The Department of Justice announced in December that it would investigate the University of New Mexico's sexual assault policies. What can be done to improve the way universities and colleges handle sexual assault? What are options that are available to survivors in New Mexico? And how can we make campuses safer? Joining me in the studio today are Claire Harwell, an attorney and the project director for an organization called Community Justice for Survivors of Sexual Assault, and Tomas Aguirre, dean of students at the University of New Mexico. So let's start by talking a little bit about what you both do. Tomas, you've been at UNM for about a year and a half now, right?
Yes.
Tell us about your work on the university's sexual assault policies during that time.
So as dean of students, you sort of serve two roles. You are responsible for certain areas that report to you, and then you serve generally as the student advocate. So as dean of students, I've had the opportunity to facilitate a number of initiatives that the university has begun over the last 2 to 3 years that have focused on addressing sexual violence within our campus community.
Now, describe UNM's SMART team for us a little bit, if you will.
So SART was actually now known as SMART, originally known as SART, Sexual Assault Response Team, was actually one of the first initiatives that President Frank supported back in May of 2013. And that is actually a partnership between a number of different campus resources. It was co-chaired by the Women's Resource Center and the University Police Department. But it also included members from the community. And it really focused on the response part of it. But then since then, there's been a number of other initiatives that have taken more of a holistic approach.
Now, Claire, you've got a grant from the Department of Justice to provide free legal help to survivors of sexual assault in New Mexico. What kinds of things do you help people with?
So we wrote this grant very broadly in order to be able to help people with whatever kind of legal needs they might have, not necessarily as a result of a sexual assault, but sort of as wraparound legal services. And the idea is that we would create a space in someone's life so that they could do the healing work, and that we would work through rape crisis centers so that the services would be available together. So someone who seeks services from the rape crisis center would be immediately referred to our legal services professionals and get an intake where we would assess what kinds of ways we might be able to use legal remedies to assist someone just to be able to heal. So our services are primarily focused in the civil realm, but we do also do some advocacy around criminal justice processes. If someone wants to go that route and wants to report to police and pursue prosecution, in that realm, we work particularly around issues related to privacy in the criminal justice system. On the civil side, the most common legal needs that we work on are related to educational accommodations, work accommodations, leave from work, housing issues, and orders for protection.
Now, you also find yourself working with college students, right?
Absolutely, all over the state.
You've conducted trainings for police, medical providers, judges, and more. What do your trainings focus on?
Under this particular grant, our trainings are focused on teaching providers that when someone's sexually assaulted, they don't just have to soldier on, that there are actually legal responsibilities for other entities to assist survivors in their healing. So in a number of different settings, we are telling employers, we're telling schools that they actually do have legal obligations, and we're helping clients to assert those on their own. Or in some instances where clients are feeling too disabled or too depressed to be able to assert those rights, then we do it on their behalf.
So let's start by talking about options for survivors of sexual assault on college campuses. Now, first, students can reach out to the police for a criminal investigation. Now, I interviewed Lieutenant Tim Stump with UNM's Police Department last week, and he recommended that survivors contact the department as soon as possible so they can begin collecting evidence or establishing a crime scene if that's appropriate. Tomas, how would a student go about making that report to police?
Well, a student can actually report to anybody who works within the university community, understanding or recognizing that there are some individuals within the university that are mandatory reporters, and then there's others that can take the information confidentially. So, for example, the Women's Resource Center, a student could go to the Women's Resource Center, and everything that they would share with the Women's Resource Center would be kept in confidence, right? Very similar to what Claire does is we really want to give the students the options, you know, and my office, again, is really focused on the advocacy piece and the healing piece, too. So we're not going to push a student to go one way versus the other way, right? But it is important that, you know, UPD can gather evidence just in case, because if a student changes their mind and decides at some point to pursue it through a legal or a criminal venue, then you need to have that evidence, right? But they could also simply focus on the university process, and that would be investigated through the Office of Equal Opportunity. Again, there's that civil route if they chose that. Or they could just go through my office and not go through any of those paths. And what we would focus on, again, is just providing accommodations, regardless of whether any of those other processes were initiated. So I've worked with many students who said, I don't want to go this route, I don't want to go that route, but I need help with my classes. I need help, you know, communicating to my faculty that I just need a little more time to heal before I can jump back into the swing of things. So we really try to give the students as many options as possible. It's more informational. It's more a support process. And the student can then go any venue, you know, choose any venue they choose to pursue.
Before we leave reporting, I understand the police department's emphasis on reporting soon. And of course, it is best for the criminal justice process if the report is prompt. But I think it's also important for your listeners that we recognize that what we know from a quarter century of research is that the most likely scenario is that somebody who's been traumatized in this way is going to take a while to try and figure out what it is that happened to them. And they're not going to understand the experience as a sexual assault for some period of time. That's normative. That's normal for people to take some extended period of time to try and figure out what this intense, profound betrayal really meant. And I think it's important for listeners to understand that that does not mean that the criminal justice process is completely cut off to them. It is possible to pursue charges later.
Okay, we'd like to hear from you today as well. What can be done to improve the way universities and colleges handle sexual assault? How can we make campuses safer in New Mexico? Call now, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866, or toll free, 877-899-5866. You can also email collinshow@kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM Health. Now, returning a little bit to police investigations, I was also surprised to learn from that interview with Lieutenant Stump that if students call the Albuquerque Police Department, all campus sexual assaults are routed back to UNMPD regardless. Claire, do you know if that's fairly standard for universities with their own police departments?
It's standard for offenses that happen on campus to be referred to the campus police department, where the campus police are certified law enforcement officers like they are at UNM. I guess I am not aware that, for example, if a student lives off campus in an apartment, that APD would then refer them to UNM police department. I'm not sure that that's true.
It's for sexual assaults that happen on campus.
Okay. So So the police department in the city and in the county would respond to cases that occur in their jurisdiction, and then the state police has jurisdiction over the totality. But all of them will refer to UNM for events that happen on UNM campus.
Now, has this been a factor in sexual assault cases that you've handled?
Well, I'm not so much here. In other jurisdictions where I've worked, there has been some confusion about who do I go to. And some perceptions that one department is more favorable than another, but I haven't had that experience here.
And UNMPD told me that they have detectives trained specifically to handle campus sexual assault cases and that the department has all of the same investigative powers as, say, APD. Now, Claire, is there concern locally or nationally about having campus police do these investigations?
Well, not if they have specialized training. The specialized training is really critical, and it's important that campus officers, any officer that's going to do these kinds of investigations, understand the neurobiology of trauma, what that means in terms of being able to relate a traumatic memory. That impacts how you do an interview. It impacts how you do an interrogation. They're very specialized kinds of searches and warrants, search warrants that need to happen in sexual violence cases, and there needs to be specialized training with regard to that. There needs to be specialized training with regard to anticipating defenses and seeing if those defenses apply in a particular case. So as long as the training is very specific, then there's no concern. But the problem has been that some campuses, and I'm not talking about UNM in this sentence, I'm talking to your wider audience across the state, some campuses have certified law enforcement officers, and they're people who have street experience, for example. And being a street cop is not necessarily training to do intensive, specialized investigations like sexual violence cases demand.
Oh, yeah, Tomas.
But I would also ask, isn't that same challenge smaller municipalities, for example, aren't they? I mean, I did some work with the Institute on Sexual Violence and Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault at the University of Texas, and they were in the process of creating a workbook for law enforcement throughout the state because, according to them, this was not just a challenge that institutions of higher learning were being faced with. It's also that small town in, you know, West Texas who might, you know, have more beat officers within their staff, and they also might not have, you know, that specialized training that you mentioned earlier. Would you agree?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So our project is based in the New Mexico Coalition of Sexual Assault Programs, which is a statewide technical assistance program that provides free training for law enforcement officers. And we provide the funding for officers from remote locations to come to Albuquerque if the training's held in Albuquerque, or to come to Santa Fe, et cetera. And so that the only thing the department then winds up paying for that specialized training is the overtime for the officer to attend. We pay all travel expenses, hotel, food, everything. So in New Mexico, there's really no reason that an officer should not have the specialized training. We provide more than one of these trainings a year, and we target specific aspects of doing these kinds of trainings. The one thing that I do think is important to distinguish, though, is that on campus, you are working with the target population that has the highest risk for this particular crime. So a small town is not going to have that same density of probable victims for this particular kind of crime.
Okay, we're going to take a call from someone who's going to help us contextualize this as a statewide issue. Let's go to Sarah from Albuquerque. Sarah, are you there?
Yes, I do want to agree with you guys that this sexual assault and sexual harassment and abuse against women is a New Mexico statewide issue. New Mexico has been notorious for abuse towards women with the domestic violence rate, and I'm surprised that we're not hearing about this up in Santa Fe right now. We've got the state legislation session right now. We should be hearing about it, that there's lobbyists that are pushing for stricter and harsher punishment for the assailants. So that my experience living in New Mexico, I've never been so stalked and sexually harassed at the bus stop. And on the buses, men coming up and touching my legs, drunken men wanting to put their hands on me, and men trying to pick me up at the bus stop. And I was thinking about installing those emergency buttons at the bus stops for the alcoholic, sexual aggressive men that harass women. And there was a report on the newspaper about a woman that wrote an article that they found a man masturbating on the bus while she was on the bus. Just by walking down the street on a certain type of street, a man would want to stop and yelling and screaming at the car, trying to pick you up and selling, you know, the sexual innuendos. And this place is just unbelievable. New Mexico, this is a real problem, you know?
Okay, thanks for your comment today, Sarah. We're going to go to Bill from Las Lunas, who's talking about campus orientation. Bill, are you with us?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
During the beginning of the school year, an orientation class should begin with self-prevention. And self-prevention, I'll give you an example. Many females jog around campus, jog around the neighborhood on campus, and when they're jogging, they eliminate one of their six senses, which is hearing, because they put radio headsets on. And when they do that, it's very crucial that they examine their lifestyle and stuff like that. When you wear a headset like that, you're plugging up your hearing sense. And it's very important that women understand that there is self-prevention.
Okay, well, thanks very much for your comment, Bill. Tomas, do you have a response?
No, thank you for that call. And just for the record, every new student that comes into the University of New Mexico, and we're not just talking about first-year students, we're also talking about transfer students, they must go through an orientation. And within that orientation, we talk about issues just like that. We talk about safety. We talk about alcohol abuse. We talk, or the risks or dangers of binge drinking. We talk about sexual violence. So it's all in there.
Hear a lot of people, sexual assault advocates talking, or people who advocate for survivors of sexual assault, talking about how, you know, we need to keep an eye on placing blame on the perpetrator. Claire, do you have some thoughts on that?
I do. The best practices for orientation, the evidence-based practices for orientation training and for prevention training, focus on addressing sort of how predators prey on individuals and how we as a community can respond to that. So it's called bystander training. And the idea is that if we identify a situation where someone else is at risk, then we step in order to act as a protective community. And rather than making one individual responsible for the predatory behavior of someone else, as a community, we take responsibility for the safety of each other. And that's that pro-social message is really, I think it goes to the foundation of what we want in all kinds of communities, not just university communities.
Okay, we're talking about campus sexual assault today. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco with KUNM's Public Health New Mexico Project. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
On the next Making Contact.
My sexiness, you cannot buy it. You cannot sell it. I'm really using my body and my sex appeal or my appearance in the way I want it.
The female body as medium and as message. How can a woman determine how she's perceived by the world and even by herself?
Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
Risking criminal prosecution. Right now, somewhere in America, a family is preparing to help a relative hasten their death.
So we set a date and made preparations and created what was a ritual.
I'm Mark Dowie, inviting you to join us for a special documentary on end-of-life choices, Helping a Loved One Die, from Talking Point Radio.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, and we're talking about sexual assault on college campuses. There are many avenues for reporting sexual assaults that happen on campus. Survivors can initiate a criminal investigation conducted by police. They can contact university administration and seek recourse through the school. They can file civil charges against an assailant in court and pursue financial restitution. What are the pros and cons of these options? Joining me today are Claire Harwell, Project Director for Community Justice for Survivors of Sexual Assault, and Tomas Aguirre, Dean of Students at the University of New Mexico. Now, Another option for survivors is that they can also reach out to the university's Office of Equal Opportunity if they're looking to have one of their fellow students suspended or expelled. That's a totally different track, right, Tomas? Can you describe the university process to us?
So the university process, then, they could be referred to OEO, or they could go to OEO directly, and then OEO would conduct an investigation, and if they found reason, because again, within the universities, we use preponderance, so we're looking at 51%. OEO would then refer that back to the Office of Student Rights and Responsibilities, which would then sanction the perpetrator. And again, you know, the sanctioning that we can do with the university is somewhat limited compared to, say, a criminal process. It could range anywhere from a warning to an expulsion. At the same time, my experience working at six different universities, including UNM, for almost 20 years, I've never seen a student that was held responsible for rape, sexual violence, that wasn't expelled or suspended from the institution.
Now, do you think the Dean of Students Office has enough authority in the scope of sanctions it can impose?
I believe so. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure what else we could do. I mean, we don't issue fines. We don't incarcerate our students. I mean, those are pretty standard sanctions that are typical for any university throughout the United States. I mean, I don't want to go so far to say that we're in the business of educating, because we're also in the business of keeping our community safe. So expelling a student or suspending a student, sure, there might be an educational piece to that, but it's also because we believe that potential predator poses a threat to the university community, and we want to keep the members of our community safe. So that's why we would typically suspend or expel.
Claire, why do you think a student might choose this university route and avoid a criminal investigation?
Well, I guess I'd want to say one thing about your last question before I answer that one, and that is that, just to clarify what someone's goals might be, holding someone accountable under the Student Code of Conduct might not mean that somebody wants something super punitive at the far end of the spectrum. They might simply want the university to take a stand about what they are describing has happened to them. So some students feel like the university is kind of an extended family, and they need the university to support them and validate their truth. And whatever the university's sanction is, that's up to the university. Some students would prefer not to have the more public aspect of going through the criminal justice process. There are limited outside civil remedies that are directed at the perpetrator himself. And this is a process where some survivors feel empowered, and we're available to help survivors navigate this process as well.
Okay, we're going to take a call from Deborah in Albuquerque. Deborah, good morning. Can you hear me?
Good morning.
Okay, what's your comment or question?
Well, so I've been listening for a little while here, and basically I was really happy to hear I feel like it's really helpful to hear about the bystander, focusing on the bystanders and focusing on creating a safe community. Because before that, I was hearing a lot more about sort of supporting survivors, which is really good. I'm interested in thinking about sexual assault on campus as a public health issue for the campus, especially because research shows that many campus assaults are committed by a very, very small percentage of perpetrators. And perpetrators tend to be repeat perpetrators who have committed between 4 and 6 campus assaults each. And so it seems like it would really be in the interest of the university of identifying those folks and getting them off campus before they harm many members of the campus community. And so I'm kind of interested in hearing, and to draw an analogy back in the old days, it seemed like people would just leave it, the police would leave it up to the survivor whether or not they were going to press domestic violence charges. A lot of municipalities have now changed those rules that the police go in and decide, and they decide on behalf of the community whether or not charges are going to be pressed. And I think there's room for the university to consider such an approach. And I'm not talking about criminal charges right now that the university would decide, but deciding whether to take action to remove that person from the university community. And I'll also just note that I read an article that said that one reason that universities are acting the way that they are is that someone who is accused of rape or sexual assault is more, they and their parents are more likely to sue the university over that accusation than a survivor is to sue about an assault. And so, therefore, universities have taken the tack that they have kind of on liability grounds.
Okay, well, thank you for your comment, Deborah. Claire, do you have a response for Deborah?
Yeah, I appreciate your referencing particularly the serial offender research. I think that's really an important component for us to talk about, and I hope we'll get into that in more detail. So the next wave of requirements that's coming down the pike for universities is that they do a climate survey. So they figure out what's going on their particular campus. And that's critical in order to be able to design those pro-social programs to prevent and respond to sexual violence so that it actually takes into account the culture of the individual institution and its students. And I think that that is going to be really when we see a big turn in how institutions respond. The historical likelihood of offenders or responding students being more likely to sue has shifted dramatically in the last year. Since the Dear Colleague letter, many students have taken this on themselves. There are a number of online tutorials and national groups with students teaching students how to file complaints against institutions. And students are suing institutions, survivors are suing institutions at a much larger number, in much larger numbers than they have in the past. So survivors are really becoming empowered in this whole process. And survivors are really the driving force with even why it's on the radar to the extent that it is. And one last comment, the past philosophy around going forward, regardless of whether or not a crime victim wanted to go forward, has also shifted in the criminal justice system. And it's shifted as a result of research that's found that although that was well-intentioned, that created more danger. Because if I'm in a situation where I know the perpetrator, I'm in a better position to evaluate whether or not this is going to make it a more dangerous situation. And I would argue that that's also true for survivors, that survivors need to drive the process to the greatest extent possible so that their needs can be met and they don't have to take on the responsibility for our communities where our communities have failed to act.
We'd like to hear from you today as well. How can we increase the number of college students who report sexual assault after it happens? Give us a call, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. Or toll-free long distance, 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM Health. So what are some of the reasons people don't report sexual assault? Call or write, please, and let us know. Now let's talk a little bit about the serial offender research. What's been your take on that, Claire?
So that research has been done on college campuses, and then it's been replicated in communities and also with the military. And basically what it demonstrates is that the vast majority of sexual assaults are committed by people who commit more than one sexual assault. They don't necessarily specialize in a particular kind of violence. These perpetrators may have other kinds of offenses that they commit, particularly domestic violence and child abuse are companion crimes that we often see in the literature. And what we know about these individuals is that they see themselves as more sexually successful than other men. Although they know they might get in trouble for it, they don't see themselves as rapists per se. And unfortunately, our society has been very slow to recognize them as rapists as well, because the typical offender on campus knows his victim and manipulates vulnerabilities, particularly around use of alcohol. He will often be the person who provides excessive amounts of alcohol in order to render the victim in order to render the victim less credible if and when she decides she wants to make a formal statement about that, and also to make it difficult for her to describe the events because of her impairment.
Tomas, do you have some thoughts on this serial offender research as it relates to campus sexual assault?
No, I think, Claire, you know, it's a great segue, because I think going back to the previous question, you're right. We do need to change the culture that exists on college campuses. And I would argue that it's really a culture that exists worldwide, you know, where we're much more focused on the behavior of the victim or the survivor versus on the behavior of the perpetrator. So we, for example, know that as we continue to push these initiatives forward, we anticipate a spike in the number of reports, because as the culture changes, more students are going to come forward with these types of reports, right? And that's going to give us a better sense of what's going on. So as Claire mentioned, we can become more focused and specialized in terms of the types of interventions that we're doing. And I agree. I think doing some sort of climate survey is going to be helpful to everyone. But many universities have been reluctant to do that because they want a level playing field. They want every university to have that same climate survey because you know, if one university is doing it, another university isn't, you know, that might impact, you know, the student enrollment or whatever. We actually did a climate survey last year that we're now releasing the results of today, albeit it was more focused on housing and athletics. But it gave us some really, really good information. But sort of in closing that, I think a lot of the programming that we're doing right now is exactly to address that. It's educational. We want our students to understand the risks and the dangers of binge drinking. We want our students to understand what is consent. We want our students to understand how they can be a bystander, right? And we're hoping that as we continue to raise this awareness, we can start to tackle the problem at its core, so to speak. Because as the previous caller mentioned, yes, if it's a small number of individuals, we do want to move them out, you know, because it's just going to benefit everybody within that community.
Let's take a call from Lizzie in Albuquerque. Lizzie, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, I'm calling in. I just had to call in because I'm offended by how sterile this conversation has been. And that caller who called in and talked about self-prevention, quote-unquote, it's so offensive, and that is what rape culture is, right? So rape culture is about blaming it on women or blaming it on queer people or trans people and telling them that they need to adjust their behavior or the way that they navigate the world. But that's not going to change anything. We need to make a structural change. So we need to address the things that allow rape on campus, sexual assault, sexual harassment, or even just how acceptable it is to objectify women and female-bodied people. So those things are patriarchy, they're economic inequality, it's racism, and it's colonization. So Native women have the highest rates of sexual assault than any other demographic because of our government's federal Indian policy. So I know that right now UNM has this PR campaign and that it looks bad that DOJ is making this probe, but if we're going to make a real change, then we need to get real and talk about real people and the lives that are at stake, and also the social impacts, right? So if you guys could address race and colonization, homophobia, transphobia, the reasons why somebody might not want to report to the police because of a total lack of faith in APD and UNMPD in general, and because of people's past experiences with UNMPD and APD mocking them or not believing them, and just maybe bring this down a notch and make it less bureaucratic and more about real-life experience, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for your comment, Lizzie. Claire, do you have a response for Lizzie?
Yeah, I think that's a good reality check, and I appreciate your speaking from the heart to us, Lizzie. I mean, I have a number of clients who feel like the system is not safe for them for lots of different reasons. You've articulated a lot of them. I mean, one of the things that we know is that predators are really good at finding our vulnerabilities, and we all have them. And these are people who sort of seek out our soft spots. And that isn't about the person who has that vulnerability. That's about the predator who has become so skilled that they are finding ways to exploit us. And many of us have been exploited in many different ways. The race concern that you raise is very real. The sort of intergenerational trauma component of being victimized as a Native woman is something that we can't look away from. We have to figure out how to have systems that are more responsive to people who have had multiple experiences of trauma. And again, I'm not saying that that's anything that's about them. That's about their sort of being on the receiving end of a lot of really bad stuff. And there are a lot of ways that our systems could improve in responding to those kinds of issues. And I certainly hope that this scrutiny will assist all of us in doing better at responding to individual people's needs. I encourage people who need help navigating the system to contact us. That's one of the reasons that we wrote the grant, is to help people to navigate systems. And we do that on an individual basis through one-on-one meetings, and we meet people where they are. So I hope that if people who are listening feel like they need help navigating a system that's unfriendly to them for whatever reason, that they will feel free to call us directly.
It also brings to mind that sometimes people might not feel safe reporting to police departments particularly. Do you have thoughts on why people might not feel safe reporting to police departments?
Sure. I can speak to that anecdotally, and also there's some research about it. I'll start with the research. The research says that people are afraid they won't be believed, and plenty of survivors have experiences of not being believed by people who are close to them, and that sets them up to not believe that the system will take what they have to say seriously. So there's that issue. There's also sort of the media presentation of how rape survivors are responded to by systems. There's also concerns about talking about that thing that the predator utilized. We all have something that we don't want to talk about, that's some part of us that we don't want out there in the public eye, and people are concerned about that. Confidentiality is a really critical concern. So again, that's one of the reasons that we exist, is so that we can help people navigate that system. We can help them talk through what the pros and cons are of going forward with police reporting. Another innovation that's available on some campuses is confidential reporting, which is something that the military is experimenting with. And that allows people who are reporting a crime to make decisions about how much they expose themselves, basically. So anonymous reporting is possible through that kind of blind reporting. There's a system that's in place that's a model system that started in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where the University of North Carolina is. And that's a model that's utilized by some campuses. I know MIT had it for a period of time. It's another way to allow people to report without necessarily exposing themselves.
Tomas, did you want to jump in on this topic?
No, we do have that at UNM. So if there are any students or parents out there, I mean, they can go to Counseling and Psych Services. They can go through the Women's Resource Center. Both of those are confidential reporters. Or if they need a first stop and they just want to do similar to what Claire was talking about earlier, they could come to the Dean of Students' office and we could map out the different options and, you know, discuss the resources or any sort of accommodations that they might need.
We're talking about campus sexual assault today. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break.
This Week in This American Life, Jeff had a webcam on a wild osprey nest with a female bird and three hatchlings. And lots of people watched.
And then it all blew up when she started attacking the young.
Jeff started getting emails demanding that he do something, remove or kill the mom.
Momzilla. That was the name they gave her.
This Week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
Start 2015 clean by getting that old car or truck or motorcycle or boat or farm equipment or RV out of sight. If it has an engine, running or not, we'll haul it away. Unwanted vehicles are a great source of income for KUNM, and we don't have to interrupt programming to raise this income, except to tell you how to donate. Another bonus, you get a KUNM membership and a tax deduction. It's very easy. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco, and we're talking about sexual assault on college campuses. Joining me today are Claire Harwell, Project Director for Community Justice for Survivors of Sexual Assault, and Tomas Aguirre, Dean of Students at the University of New Mexico. We're going to jump right into a call from Julie in Albuquerque, who's going to talk about what's being done in Santa Fe. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. And Lizzie, thank you so much for calling in and really bringing us back to the individual and community perception. I'm the lobbyist for the Coalition of Sexual Assault Programs, and I work on these issues and appreciate the callers. I wanted to respond to the previous caller that asked about what was happening in Santa Fe. We are working on a number of policy issues in Santa Fe, but the hardest one, because we do have a lot of good law on the books for sexual assault victims, and for we have some great work going on for prevention. And so what we really need is the hardest policy to pass, and that is a budget item. We have to start funding the rape crisis centers and funding rape crisis centers to work with these campuses in order to prevent sexual assault, certainly to respond to the needs of victims and survivors and to increase those responses. But the most difficult item that we work on is the budget item to serve those victims and prevent sexual assault. So I would just encourage your listeners, if they care about this issue, which I know a lot of us do, to call their legislators, call up to Santa Fe, and ask them to truly fund services and prevention.
Okay, Tomas, you have some thoughts on that?
No, I think working at a public institution, I would echo that. I mean, so for example, the climate. So today we're having a press conference on campus from 10 to noon. We hired an outside firm to come in and do a campus climate survey that I had mentioned earlier. And they make approximately 48 recommendations. And as you go through those recommendations, it's amazing how many of them are tied into resources and budgets. It's just, you know, for example, suggesting or recommending that we hire more police on campus, or that we purchase Segways, or that we improve the lighting. I mean, all of that is tied into dollars. So I would agree with that completely. It's a lot of times, you know, it's well-intentioned, right? But you're somewhat limited, because if you just don't have the funding to get it done, it's challenging and it's tough. So I support her work, and hopefully, you know, we'll see some more support from Santa Fe in that fashion.
Okay, let's go to Joe from Albuquerque. Joe, good morning. You're on the KUNM Call-In Show.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say that I think the issue of sexual assault is not that different from the overall issue of evil in our society as a whole. You know, how do you prevent evil? So, I mean, I think, you know, we just need to protect ourselves from evil people and do what we can to prevent it, whether that's, you know, treatment for alcohol abuse or family counseling or reduction of poverty or, I mean, there's a lot of different kind of social services that that we have to try and prevent it. And I know that it all comes down to dollars in order to make these programs happen, but I think that's what we should do.
Now, Tomas, when I was reviewing the recommendations, one thing I spotted was a discussion of campus safety. Pelgrim and Associates recommends that UNM improve its security environment. How is the university beefing up security?
Well, as best as we can. I mean, there have been a number. We're starting to prepare for the next budget cycle. So there have been a number of requests that have been made, you know, so we can hire more officers on campus. And, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, maybe getting, you know, more vehicles, whether those be like Segways or cars. One thing that we did do December of 2013 We did purchase what we call it's a Rave Guardian system, and it allows students to use their cell phones sort of like blue phones. So wherever they are, they can send out an alert. They can sort of be tracked through GPS. They can set timers. But the university is really, you know, in terms of safety, doing everything it possibly can. If we can't hire more officers, you know, there's been some discussion of, you know, taking like a student patrol that currently exists within our university housing and expanding it campus wide. But, you know, trying to stretch every dollar that we have and make it count for something and really be as impactful as possible.
Okay, and we're going to go to Daniel in Albuquerque. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning. Thank you very much for being here. This one's kind of hard to just jump into, so I'm going to go in with both feet. When I was in graduate school, I was drugged, beaten, and raped and held captive for 4 days. And that was crushing. And what I've watched through the whole conversation about rape is that there is so much fear and anger and anxiety about every single facet of the entire sexual exchange in that very young group of people. We're all going to get drunk. We're all going to sit there and make ourselves a petri dish for hostility and whatever urge is going on in our lives. And that fear is going to permeate everything from hello and a handshake all the way down to reporting a rave. And when the previous caller was going to talk about rape culture, this is a really important part of understanding how to stop this, is working on some sense of the constantly pervasive fear that goes on in every quarter. If we could find some way where young people meet each other without getting stone drunk, without having to be terrified of asking for sex, how does one even go about doing that? We used to have some sense of education about that. I don't think we do anymore. I was used as a party favor, and I had no one to turn to. I drank for 20 years. You know, that's the way guys get over it. Going for more alcohol after alcohol got you into this. I don't even understand how we can continue tolerating that culture on a campus. And anything we could do that could eliminate the entire petri dish of violence there would probably be better than adding more guns and patrols and things around the campus. I'd like to hear comments from your experts here. Thank you.
Tomas, do you want to tackle that topic?
Oh, no, I agree. I mean, so the presidential task force that we had last summer, that's really what we focused on first and foremost. We recognized immediately that we could get the most bang for our buck by focusing on the educational piece. And the educational piece didn't really require more resources. It just meant training more trainers and getting access to, as Claire mentioned, you know, those more vulnerable populations on campus. So I agree with you completely. It's changing that culture, and you do that through the education. And I would say it needs to start sooner than university. It needs to start in high school, you know, because a lot of our students are coming to the university with these preconceived notions, and those things are being created in high school, if not as early as middle school. So partnering more within the K-12 system and making sure that we're planting those seeds early enough and then continuing to reinforce them. But I think of all the things that we do, at least all the things that I've been privy to in the year and a half that I've been at UNM, really we've put most of our focus, most of our energy, most of the resources into the educational piece. And not just educating students, but, you know, also educating faculty, educating staff, partnering with our community partners and trying to bring them in and using them as resources.
I have a question for you, Claire. Isn't focusing on alcohol consumption kind of part of a blame the victim mentality?
I think it is. And before I get to that, I just want to thank the last caller for the profound sharing. Male survivors are often missing from this conversation, and it's very important for us to recognize and acknowledge their need for services. And I just want to reaffirm that the Rape Crisis Centers in New Mexico do serve both men and women, and our project does as well. So focusing on the alcohol is sort of a subset of what we need to do. And UNM doesn't have to create this itself. Last summer, there was a nationwide summit that was held at Dartmouth, and a lot of I think there were 200 folks that came together, and six working groups were formed looking at various aspects of addressing sexual violence on campus. And working groups are working on white papers on various aspects of this, so that once the white paper is out, institutions don't have to worry about being the outlier that might look like they have a worse problem. But what Dan raises, this problem of binge drinking, is of course also a developmental issue. And focusing on just that without understanding where it comes from and how it happens, I think a lot of conversation around healthy sexuality is essential. And a number of schools across the country have gone to something that's called affirmative consent. And that means that if I'm going to have a sexual contact with someone, I have to ask. And that's part of any kind of OEO investigation later is, how did you know you had consent? What was said? So then OEO is not dealing with these nuances of nonverbal communication that are more complicated to investigate. Excuse me.
Claire, what do you hope survivors take away from our conversation today?
So the most important thing, I think, is that there is help. There are ways to access help that are safe, and that it is possible to ponder your options without taking a particular course. And you also can reverse course if you need to. But the most important thing for survivors is that survivors need to be able to claim what they need. And that's what our project is about. And they're welcome to call me directly at 505-977-4431. That's my business cell. And any survivor is welcome to call just to ask questions.
As we wind up today, I want to point people to resources for survivors of sexual assault in New Mexico. The Rape Crisis Center hotline number is 505-266-7711, or find them online at rapecrisisnm.org. Albuquerque's sexual assault nurse examiners can be reached at 505-844-SANE. That's S-A-N-E. UNM students can find a whole host of resources relating to sexual assault at loborespect.unm.edu. Find this list on KUNM.org, too. Thank you for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Our guests today were Tomas Aguirre, Dean of Students for UNM, and Claire Harwell, Project Director for Community Justice for Survivors of Sexual Assault. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you missed any of this program and you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. You can email comments to callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or follow the public health team on Twitter at KUNM Health. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Michael Hess screened your calls. Kaveh Movahed assisted with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the McCune Foundation and the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. I'm your host and KUNM Public Health reporter, Marisa DeMarco.